Arts Waves, the Monday edition of Cover to Cover. I'm Richard Walensky. My guest is Loretta Greco, the artistic director of Magic Theater in San Francisco. This is your seventh season as artistic director, and also the director of Nilo Cruz's adaptation of Life is a Dream, La Vida es Sueño, by Calderon, Pedro Calderon de la Barca, at Cal Shakes, July 8th through August 7th. And we'll be talking about the Magic, past season, upcoming season, Cal Shakes, and also a play you'll be doing at ACT later this year, The Realistic Joneses, as a director. Let me start by talking about La Vida es Sueño, Life is a Dream. This adaptation is more than just a translation, is that correct?
It's really interesting because Nilo's been incredibly faithful to the original. As a Spanish speaker first, he's redreaming in English to begin with. So we went and we sat with the Eric Bentley edited in English, the Spanish, and Nilo's. And Nilo has done some deft editing and then really embraces Calderon's sense of humor with his own kind of beautiful playfulness, and then the darker sides with his own sense of isolation. John Moscone and I looked at a lot of different pieces before we decided on this, and it was really fun because he did let me sort of pitch some ideas. And the other adaptations of this play are wildly different from the original. And Nilo's is actually quite elegant and beautiful and somehow feels like Nilo and is incredibly true to the original material.
Have you worked at Cal Shakes in the theater before?
I haven't. I've never worked at Cal Shakes. I've been to the Bruns before. I love going out and having dinner and a little bit of wine and watching a show. And John and I have been colleagues for a while, so this has just been a blast.
Working at a place like the Magic or even at a standard proscenium theater is quite different than working in this outdoor amphitheater, or is it?
Well, that's the thing that's interesting. I've never worked outdoors before. Even at OSF, I've worked in two different spaces, but not the outdoor Elizabethan. And it's like merging the real estate of an ACT with more of the sense of the Magic in terms of the rap of the audience. It's not a true thrust, but it's certainly not a proscenium. So we're having a lot of fun sort of owning the space and also having a real sense of play with the audience, since it's probably a 90-minute event. It's going to be pretty light out. So our relationship to the audience is really going to be pretty unified. So we're trying to embrace that.
I mean, I think I read it back in high school.
Yeah.
I don't remember
yeah.
at all.
I read it in grad school. I was like, oh, I remember that Calderon, that Life is a Dream. It was always when I always thought that and Fuente Ovejuna, that those were two plays that I'd want to do as an adult. And then I hadn't looked at it since. I mean, I really hadn't. I'd read Octavio Solis's Dreamlandia, which is his redreaming of it. I had read Laird Williamson's really reconceiving of the Calderon. And I had seen Jose Rivera's Sueño, which is his redreaming. All of those have completely different endings from the original Calderon. Nilo's is faithful. So you're in for a treat because it's an astounding piece of work that asks us to think about our existence, the idea of living by absolute morals. I'm really looking at it as a kind of modern, kind of contemporary fairy tale that lends some lessons as to how we might learn to live a little better.
Not actually all that contemporary, because you're talking contemporary with Shakespeare, pretty much. I mean, 1636, I believe,
it's
is the year.
The Spanish Golden Age. But, you know, for me, I always believe this, whether I'm directing or whether I'm seeing a play. I think, you know, there's a reason the classics are classics, and it's our job to always make them important in a contemporary way. And I certainly don't mean by shoehorning them into a concept, but I do think that they have incredibly deep, rich things to say about what it is to be human, and that never goes out of style.
So Nilo Cruz, is he dealing with the language? Is he trying to bring it up to date? I mean, obviously, we're kind of lucky in doing an interpretation because you don't have to stick with things in Shakespeare that are a little difficult to comprehend.
The biggest distinction is the structure. Is Calderon has these sweeping arias and soliloquies that literally go on for four pages. And Nilo has sculpted away at those to gain the essence. Nilo's own poetry is so profoundly delicious and playful. So it's the way he thinks. So it has a very natural way about it. But the language, you do feel that the language is lifted from the way you and I speak. At the same time, there's incredible agency and incredible willfulness. The two women in the play are fierce and utterly contemporary in terms of going after the things they want. I think it's a beautiful marriage between the intent of the Golden Age, the poetry of Calderon, the poetry of Nilo's, and our own yearning for a theatrical event to kind of alter our lives.
What I found interesting is the previous show, Twelfth Night, is about a woman disguising herself as a man. So is this.
Well, you know, it doesn't last long. Rosada comes into the play dressed as a man, but she's quickly liberated, only to be put in another disguise, but one of as a female, until she finally reveals herself.
Unraveling that plot to make it coherent is partly the job of the translator, the adapter. It's also the job of the director. How do you unravel something so complex?
You know, it's funny. Each of the characters brings in a backstory that's quite extensive and some might say convoluted. But the way that both Calderon and Nilo dish it up, it really is, I hope, clear. The dilemmas at play are actually ones that have more to do with how difficult it is to have absolute morals coexist. So that wrestling with what is more right, you know, is the thing I think that is really what's vibrating inside the plot. You know, we're taking great care to lay it all out very mindfully. I think it's the moral wrestling that's the more active. And then, of course, the idea of, are we all here? Is life a dream? Could this very well be our subconscious playing out, or are we all here? So that's another beautiful sort of platonic backdrop of the play as well.
Loretta Greco, let's talk a little bit about the magic. Last season's shows, Bad Jews, The Sam Shepard, and I in Silence, Sister Play, and the most recent was Shorter Run, which is Golden State Part 1, Delano. I thought Bad Jews was the creme de la creme of the season.
We committed to Bad Jews. It had had 3 years of development and three significant productions, and that's not something we often do. I fell in love with the work. I loved Joshua Harmon, and we're already working on when he'll be back with a new play. So we really invested in him. The play was just sublime when it landed on my desk, and then we just did our best not to mess it up. And Ryan Purcell just, I think he directed the hell out of it. It was a beautiful cast. I found great delight because this is a community that isn't very politically incorrect, and the play is really raw in that way. So I agree. I love the play, and I was so proud to be able to introduce Joshua to Bay Area audiences and especially magic audiences. I loved that Joshua was so brave and true. And the beautiful irony, of course, is that it's absolutely not his family. He knows what he knows about his tribe, and then he really did have this dilemma in mind between these young cousins, and I just thought it was a beautiful plot, beautiful characters, beautifully penned. I can't wait to have him back.
I wasn't a huge fan of An Eye in Silence. That's sort of where the magic comes in, because sometimes plays aren't quite there, but the magic isn't that limited to the perfect play.
I think that I'm less interested in the perfect play. And I don't mean this in any kind of antagonistic way, because I actually do pick plays as an audience goer. I think about myself and the plays I want to see. But I do think if everybody loves everything, we're doing something wrong. The theater is meant to enhance and provoke and to stretch. So what was interesting is the critical response to End I in Silence was incredibly varied. Hurwit loved it. And I actually was ready for him to not love it. And so that was a surprise. I had loved the play for 3 years. No one was picking it up domestically. There was no way I was going to let Naomi Wallace write that play and not have somebody in America do it. And then, ironically, we announced and Jim Houghton announced. So she had two domestic plays, one in New York and one in San Francisco. I think for me, what she was trying to do with the language and the characters was very interesting, because it was a period in time in this country which is primarily depicted as a rosy one. And I thought that it spoke extraordinarily to the country when really we were sort of bubbling up to the 60s, and that it was an extraordinary slice of class warfare, cultural warfare, etc. And I also thought the four roles were astounding. So, I mean, but no one was on the fence. Either people loved it or it was absolutely not their cup of tea.
The sister play, you know, had moments that were just extraordinary, particularly the acting.
Yeah, we were so happy to welcome Colvin Bach back after he opened my second season with Goldfish and Mrs. Whitney, a diptych. It was also awarded an Edgerton Award, so it had an extra week of rehearsal, which really allowed it to begin its run at a place where most of our productions end their runs. The company was sublime. Some of my favorite actors, Jesse Campbell, who was featured 3 times in the season, but also to have Anthony Fusco out. He and I go way back. We worked together in New York 20 years ago. It was marvelous to have him. I thought it was absolute perfection. And John is one of those writers, a rare writer, that just belongs in the director's seat. So there was no filtering. He was able to absolutely go to the core of what these characters were about with 4 actors that were willing to go there with him. And I'm so proud of the work. I can't wait to see how that resonates throughout the country.
And the final show of the season was actually a very short run, and that's Golden State, Delano. And what occurred to me when watching it is, I know that a year ago when we talked, you had no idea, there was no play at all. And it struck me that it was a lot more finished than I thought it would be.
The run was actually the same length. We just postponed the opening. We got bumped, ironically, by ACT and Berkeley Rep, which sometimes happens. We just decided to bump the full week because Luis had started and thought he was going to write something about an extension of a work he had done called Alleluia, which would give more of a story to the jumpers off the Golden Gate. We actually had a poster that was designed with the Golden Gate Bridge, and then Luis and I sort of had to come to Jesus about it, and he decided to start again from scratch. So we even had to do new artwork for it. It was an astounding journey. Luis wrote the first week, after the first 7 days of rehearsal, he finished the first 6 scenes of the play, which was the first movement, and ended up being the first half of the play. But it was a journey that, when we were in tech, we were at 2.5 hours long. Our first preview was about 2:20 with a 15-minute intermission. And the next night, we went to 100 minutes, no intermission, and we slowly worked our way to 90. But it wasn't just a cutting, sculpting. It really was him writing, us reordering, us looking at structure while we sculpted with an extraordinary company that's come to be Luis's and my family. It was, I thought, a really astounding piece of work, which, as he wrote, Drew Boyce and the rest of the design company and I decided that it had to have a special pact with the audience. So we made the theater the church, and that made it a very different experience. And I don't know when you saw it, but even I was shocked to return the last week to see what was happening in the audience.
I saw it in the last week, so I did see the audience becomes part of the scene, and you don't know whether you're part of the play or not, which I guess is the intention.
Yeah.
One final question about that. Is it going anywhere?
Right now we're working on part two and part three with the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. So absolutely the option is for them to do it first, since they're co-commissioning. I've committed to producing all three, and then we'll push it out into the world. Absolutely.
You're listening to an interview with Loretta Greco, the artistic director of The Magic in San Francisco, the director of Cal Shake's production of Life is a Dream, La Vida es Sueño, by Calderon, July 8th through August 7th out in Orinda. Let's talk, Loretta Greco, about the upcoming season. This upcoming season at The Magic is unusual in that all of the plays are by women.
You know, the interesting thing was, delightfully, people have picked up on this and are taking note. I was very careful not to lead with that story because I didn't want to take away from the fact that we picked the five most exciting plays that happened to be penned by four women. And so I didn't want to take away the excellence quotient for, you know, maybe pulling a stunt or trying to exploit something that's really being talked about deeply. It needs to be. There's not enough women's work being done on our stages, and that's a fact. The numbers are extraordinarily depressing and consistent, and they range between about 23% and 38% on a good year, and that's playwrights and directors being represented across the country. So it's not enough. And for me, it's always a mystery because there are so many great plays written by women. I didn't want it to feel like it was a booby prize to our playwrights, like, oh, we were going to do this thing and you happened to fit the bill. Actually, the women represented in The Magic season are incredibly diverse in age, culturally, where they come from. It's a really exciting group of writers. It's a kind of interesting season that does move geographically in different directions. But I think the thing that unifies these writers is they're all really interested in language.
The first play is Fred's Diner by Penelope Skinner, British play from Chichester about a family in a diner, a roadside diner based on American roadside diners and translated over to England. You're going to have to deal with English accents?
Yes, worse, Oxford. It's set on a roadside in Oxford in an American diner. And Penelope was sort of obsessed, not just with the American diner, but with the culture of waitresses, of diner waitresses. So it's actually an incredible look at three very different women all working in this roadside diner. It's really dark, really funny, and it's kind of a thriller. She gives away some hints, she throws some misdirects, but I'm not going to spoil it. But you're trying to put the puzzle together during the course of the play, and she delivers some delicious surprises.
The reviews in Chichester were not great. Is she doing any work on it for The Magic?
Well, you know, the funny thing is I didn't even know the Chichester production had happened. It was actually a festival production, and it had great limitations. There were no lights, that they all happened during daylight. Again, I'm not going to spoil anything, but actually an essential scene of the play was cut because it couldn't be facilitated under daylight. I have no idea why she let that happen or why the review happened without experiencing the whole play. But I will tell you, it's an astounding play, and to think of seeing it without that scene, to me, is lunacy. So I'm ignoring those reviews. The play is remarkable. And it is dealing both with female sovereignty, also with class, which just never ceases to interest me. And it's just, she has a wicked sense of humor. It's a great evening of theater. She's going to be with us in residency. I'm not going to promise that 16 pages or 16 scenes get done. We have no agenda other than making the best possible production together possible.
Bright Half-Life by Tanya Barfield, West Coast premiere from the Women's Project Theater in New York in Lincoln Center, and it follows two women who have a relationship and don't have a relationship over the course of something like four decades.
Tanya is a colleague of mine from way back. In fact, I produced her when I was running the Women's Project, I don't know how many years ago. She is an extraordinary, I would say, really, mid-career artist that is one of the masters of language. So the play is doing something rather remarkable as it time travels. The play is about two women who forge a relationship and a family together. The play catapults through time forward and backward in a way that I have not seen done before. It also, for me, was incredibly specific and felt incredibly familiar in terms of what courtship looks like, what being in a relationship looks like, what breaking up looks like, and kind of ironically, how similar courtship and breaking up feels. So it's a kind of cyclical play. It was a really important play for the Women's Project to do, and they had great success with it. And I just felt like it was one that I wanted to bring to the Bay Area. And I also, Tanya hasn't been produced by the Magic, shame on me. So I'm really happy to introduce our audiences to her writing.
Dog Eaters by Jessica Hagedorn, an adaptation of a 1990 novel set in the Philippines. In looking at information about the novel and the play, there's like a lot of characters.
There are a million characters. Jessica's novel is studied to this day. It is absolutely celebrated as the quintessential Filipino-American story, despite the title, which is a naughty title. Jessica adapted this at Sundance 15 years ago, and I actually work with her on the adaptation. It has had many productions. This is a rare thing for us. It has never been produced in the Bay Area. And Jessica came to America from the Philippines and lived and started her artistic life in San Francisco. The fact that it has never been produced was enough to catalyze me to say, enough, let's do this. There are dozens of characters that will be played by a cast of 16. It is an extraordinary love letter to the Filipino community here in the Bay, which is vibrant, vast, hungry for work, and for work to be in, for work to see. So I think it's going to be an incredible communion with the really robust community here in San Francisco. And Jess came out for Virgin 2 years in a row, and we just had a great time, and it just felt like now was the moment. It is set during martial law, during Marcos regime. It catapults also through time, flashing back into the 50s and then into the 80s. It really is a kaleidoscopic experience. And we are setting it in the Manila underground. There is a character that runs his own, Perlita's Studio 54, and so the magic will be transported and transformed into an underground Manila nightclub. So it's going to be a real experience and event.
The final two plays are by Mfoniso Udofia, who is Nigerian, and these are two plays in a series, Ufot series, of four or five plays titled Sojourners, and the other is Run Boy Run.
Mfoniso is an emerging writer that we've been excited about and trying to support in our small way. She came out of ACT's Acting Conservatory. She began to write soon after. She is of Nigerian descent, and the thing about Mfoniso that just, for me, is the most exciting thing is her ambition, not in terms of driving her career, but as a writer, her ambition to write something that is larger than life, that is about a to-and-fro transatlantic conversation between Nigeria and America. It's a 9-cycle play. It will span 60 years. Our two plays, Sojourners and Run Boy, span 30 years. So in Sojourners, you meet a couple that have just arrived in America from Nigeria, hoping to seek an education and experience that they can bring back to their motherland. And then in Run Boy, you find them in America 30 years later, revisiting some of their African ghosts. The plays are in progress. Sojourners will have its world premiere in New York about a month before we go into rehearsal. So we will be the second production, so I can't wait, because Mfoniso will obviously learn immensely from having that in front of an audience. Run Boy will be receiving its world premiere with us. And I just thought that producing the two in tandem would give audiences a taste of the larger cycle of the Ufot family and of Mfoniso's voice. On Tuesday nights during the run, we're also going to have Mfoniso reading from the other plays in progress in the cycle. I think it speaks to Magic's belief in supporting writers rather than plays. I think these two plays are the first two of many that we will support of Mfoniso. I am very, very mindful of the way I want her career to launch, and I know the care that it's going to take because she's doing something so big and ambitious and huge and wonderful and theatrical, and I felt like I wanted to play a big part in it. And so it's my honor and privilege to have her. She'll be in residence with us for nearly 3 months. The thing I want to reward is the fact that she could easily write a simple four-hander about Nigeria that could be produced. And she knows that. She's interested in a bigger story. She's interested in a deeper, richer dive into a culture that we rarely get an authentic look at. And in the conversation, much like Jessica, of what it is to assimilate. How much of a culture can be cross-pollinated? How much can be assimilated? What do you leave behind? What are the ghosts? What is it to move forward? And I think she's doing that in an incredibly unique way through this Nigerian lens.
Is there going to be a Sam Shepard play in addition or no?
We're going to do there will be a special announcement. We will have a special event of Sam's. He is having a stellar year in New York. Barry Child's being revived, True West is being revived, and Fool for Love is being revived. So it just didn't feel like, when Sam and I got together about 6 weeks ago, it did not feel right to revive one of those plays. He is trying to finish something that he started for us. It's not going to be done this year. So we may celebrate one of the plays that he's interested in having read in a festival. It didn't make sense to revive one of those classic plays this year. Sam was in the Bay Area about 6 weeks ago. We talked about it deeply. It made sense for us to perhaps do a special event with him mid-year to be announced while he works on a new play for us, which I have my fingers crossed will be something we can offer in a season soon.
ACT's The Realistic Joneses, Loretta Greco, 180 degrees different from all of the other things you've discussed. Was on Broadway. It's a comedy, Will Aino. And Carrie Perloff said that it is just absolutely drop-dead funny.
It's hilarious. It's also sublime. What Will Aino is doing with language, I don't know that I've ever read a play that's doing exactly what he's doing with this play. It is absolutely his most accessible play, and I don't mean that as a backhanded compliment. It's definitely what helped it get to Broadway. It's still an odd duck on Broadway because it's just so freaking good. It's a beautiful thing that Carrie has decided to produce the play and to produce it on the Geary stage, because it could easily be done on the smaller stage at the Strand or in the black box roof space. And she's committed to it having a full life in the large, you know, in her large home. So kudos for that. And also, I'll just shout out, you know, I've done three plays prior. Lackawanna was something that I worked on and developed with Ruben Santiago Hudson, so that was something that we kind of brought to ACT. But the three plays that she's asked me to do are each plays that no one would have asked female directors to do, let alone me. So Carrie really reached out and asked me to do David Harewood's Blackbird, David Mamet's Speed the Plow, and now Willie knows The Realistic Joneses. Nobody else would ask me to direct these plays. They are no-brainers for male directors. So the fact that she reached out to me is really exciting.
A year ago, I mentioned Market Street for the Magic, and you said, yeah, well, maybe down the road. Has that moved along at all?
We're always exploring possibilities. We would love to be a part of what is a growing theater community down there. It is a dream to be able to be located where we're more accessible by public transportation. That said, we love our home at Fort Mason. It's beautiful. Parking is easy. It's very accessible to our audience in Marin. There are so many pluses about it, but we continue to look to ways to expand our audience and perhaps satellite locations.
Do you mean occasionally doing a show, say, at the Strand?
Yeah, exactly.
And finally, we've hit on the things I know about. Are there any other directorial jobs coming up in the next year?
Good God, no. I'm doing Calderon. I'm doing Penelope Skinner, Jessica Hagedorn, Will. You know, I'm going to take a long nap after that. We're also developing. We'll also, our Virgin Play Festival will be in December this year, and we're focusing it around mid-career writers. So we'll have Luis and Jessica working on new work. They're going to be in good company. So there's plenty of development and directorial jobs already on my plate. I'm not looking for anything else this year. Thanks.
And I've asked this question of Carrie and of Tony Taccone. How is it possible to be able to run a theater company and at the same time direct a play for a different theater company and have everything running smoothly?
Well, I haven't been able to do it in 6 seasons. I did it my first year. I was supposed to do it every single year, and I had to say no. So this is the first year. This year I'm here at Cal Shakes. Next year I'll be at ACT. it doesn't come without challenges, but I think that obviously it's good for me to be out in the community. But I think it behooves the Magic as well, you know, for us to be cross-pollinating. I certainly loved having John out when he came and directed out at the Magic. And, you know, we did a reading of Carrie's play. It just all feels, it feels right. But it's just a little bit more of a juggling act.
You've been listening to an interview with Loretta Greco in her seventh season as artistic director of the Magic Theater in Fort Mason. Cal Shakes, Life is a Dream, La Vida es Sueño, runs from July 8th through August 7th. For more information on the Magic, you can go to magictheater.org. And for Cal Shakes, it's calshakes.org. I'm Richard Walensky on Arts Waves, the Monday edition of Cover to Cover.